This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we feature a debate between the candidates for the 92nd State Assembly District in western Wisconsin. Democratic State Representative Chris Dano of Trumplo was first elected to the Wisconsin legislature in the fall of 2008. He's now seeking his fifth term representing the 92nd. The former Onalaska police officer is facing a challenge from Republican Treg Pronshinsky, the mayor of the city of Mondovi and the owner of a construction-related business. Wisconsin's 92nd State Assembly District covers all or part of Buffalo, Trumplo, and Jackson counties. Some of the communities where voters live include Alma, Whitehall, Arcadia, and Black River Falls. Dano and Pronshinsky participated in a broadcast debate recorded earlier this week in Wisconsin Public Radio's Eau Claire studios. It included audience questions, but please note, because this was recorded earlier this week, no new calls can be accepted. The debate's moderator is WPR reporter Rich Kramer.
What are the qualifications that you bring, and why do you want the job? So, Chris Dano, I'll start with you. Why should voters pick you for 92nd State Assembly?
Well, I think over the course of my both political career and career prior to that, I've displayed a long dedication, obviously, to public service. I chose to be a police officer because I believe in public service. The reason I chose to run for this seat was I believed in public service. Fundamentally, it's about trying to make the community that you live in a better place. And for me, that was always the motivation. I wanted western Wisconsin. It is a great place to raise a family, work, and recreate and enjoy yourself. And I wanted it to continue to be the kind of place that people want to do those things. That being said, we have to recognize the challenges that are in front of us and continue moving forward. We can't put our heads in the sand about things. And I think we have some real challenges that face rural Wisconsin over the next couple years and really going into the next decade that we need to work with and work on and deal with.
Thank you for that. Now, Treg Pronshinsky, same question to you. What qualifications are you bringing to the table, and why do you want to represent, why should voters pick you to represent them as 92nd Assembly District Chair?
Well, first of all, I think that I've got experience in many different areas, one being a self-employed businessman, and I think that there's a lot of people out there that are self-employed, and I like to bring that to the table. Another, I think, strong asset I have is I've been the mayor of Mondovi for over 2 years now, and I understand how local government works, especially with small communities. And as you had a mouthful of communities that you were talking about there, yeah, we have a lot of small rural communities, and I think I can bring that to the table and be very helpful on the issues that arise in Madison that have to be dealt with and give a voice for those small communities. You know, I've been in public service my entire adult life, whether it's, you know, volunteer fireman, ambulance commissioner, also just helping out with community groups, many youth sports. I guess that's my passion with helping youth sports in many areas, but Mondovi specifically, because that's where I've been for a long time. But, you know, I truly do care about my community. I care about the district. I've got a lot of family and friends that are throughout the district, and I'm concerned on where we're headed. And I want to be the fresh voice with new ideas, and I think I can bring a lot of common sense to Madison.
So redistricting, it's not necessarily on everyone's tongues right now, but there is a case in federal court that has to do with Wisconsin's redistricting. And of the 115 state assembly and state senate incumbents up for election this year, just more than half are running unopposed. Many political science experts say that this is because Republicans redrew voting maps to favor their own party and pack as many Democrats in as few districts as possible. The other side of the coin is that both parties do this. Just in Illinois, Democrats did this very same thing. The Democrats have done the same thing in Wisconsin when they've had the chance. So is this the way that democracy should be working? Do you think that lawmakers should control the redistricting, or should it be, as many people have asked, given to a nonpartisan panel, which would draw the maps, and then the lawmakers would vote on it? Treg Pronshinsky, I'll start with you. Do you think do you think the redistricting should be in the hands of lawmakers who stand to benefit from it?
Well, that issue has been talked about quite a bit, actually, and actually Chris and I had had this discussion a while back about redistricting. And, you know, I know Iowa has a different way of going about it. And my concern is if you get a committee, how long before it's tainted? That's the question. And, you know, you talk about Democrats doing that in Illinois. I wonder if the Democrats were in power when the redistricting went on in Wisconsin, what they would have done. And we won't know, or we never will know what they would have done because they weren't in power, but I got to believe that they would have skewed it their way. And I know a lot of these are unopposed seats on the Democratic side as well. Mm-hmm. And it's very, very frustrating to have some of these races that are not opposed. You know, my advice is people need to get involved at local levels with standing up and saying, I'm going to run for office and have a choice for the people. And I think that that's a healthy environment. You should be opposed. A good lawmaker that, or elected official for that matter, that's opposed means that they're doing something. But getting back to the question itself, you know, I guess the system that we have right now is what's in place. I would be open for debate to see how other options would work. Do I think that it's skewed one way? Well, we have three branches, the Senate, the Assembly, and the governorship, all the same party right now. And that's what you get when you have majorities. And that's what our country's based on, a democracy of majority ruling. So that would be how I would put that. I would be open for debate.
All right. Chris Dano, your thoughts on the where we're at. A lot of the districts are held by Democrats right now. The idea being that if Democrats give them safe districts, but only a few, then Republicans have others. I think that was the goal, whichever party.
Yeah, the term is packing and cracking. You pack as few of your opponents into small, compact safe districts, and then spread your vote. Then, if you're the party controlling it, you spread your vote out in a way to give you maximum efficiency as far as winning seats. And if you look at what's happened in Wisconsin, the Republicans in 2010 had full bore to redistrict the way they wanted, and they did it exactly. The district I currently represent is a perfect example. The win that the Republicans got was by putting two Democrats into one seat, myself and former Representative Mark Radcliffe, a friend of mine. They created a seat and they put two Democrats into it, and the win for them was to then essentially eliminate one Democratic legislator right off the top. No, I've always and consistently spoken out and been for some sort of nonpartisan redistricting reform. I've actually co-sponsored several bills ever since I've been in the legislature. I supported it back when we were in the majority, and I wanted to do it when we had the majority. Now, unfortunately, that didn't happen. I think the difference you see in Wisconsin is this is the first time that a single party actually controlled redistricting since 1980. And prior to that, there was always a split legislature or a split with the governor, so that essentially the courts drew maps that were reasonably fair. I think the court case that's going forward is going to be very interesting. I suspect that it will be resolved after the election. I think they were hesitant to step in and force a change to potentially change districts in front of a current election, but you may see changes. But fundamentally, what you're doing is it denies people the ability to really select their own representatives. And when you don't have competitive districts, people don't bother to run. People don't bother to challenge incumbents. And unfortunately, it further polarizes the state. It leads to more extreme type because if the only real action is in the primary, it's going to move the legislators either further to the right or further to the left. And you're seeing that happen in Wisconsin. We have a very divided state right now. Even though the state itself, if you look at the top of the ticket numbers, we're close to 51-52 back and forth between Democrats and Republicans. But because of the way the maps are drawn, it's been clearly to favor Republicans in the legislature. And that's not the case. I think at least half the seats should be close to competitive.
With regard to nonpartisan boards, what about Treg Pranchinsky's thought that whenever you have a group of people, nonpartisan, I mean, it's easy for it to swing one way or another.
Well,
how do you keep that in check?
You would have to get both parties to, say, put an equal number of people on the committee. So each, say, for the sake of argument, Democrats put four people on the line drawing committee, Republicans put four. So then you've got a 50-50 split. They're going to have to come up with lines that both sides agree with in order to get it passed.
Like the Elections Commission.
Like the Elections Commission. Or at a minute, and then the other thing is, with computer technology today, you have the option of drawing multiple maps in multiple configurations that the legislature they content look at and decide to vote on. It's much easier than it used to be with the technology we have available to us.
Another question I've got has to do with school funding. I mean, we just saw some reports coming out about what Act 10 has done to, according to the Journal Sentinel, has done to districts. Also, we've seen that a large number of districts going to referendum, and they're using these referendums to get extra money for things like building projects, maintenance, or operating expenses. At the same time, voters on average are approving these referendums more than they have in the last 10 years. Christina, I'll start with you. What does this tell you about school funding? Is that telling you that lawmakers have gotten it wrong?
That's always been one of the key reasons I decided to run for office. Is I was frustrated with what was going on in Madison and how we were funding schools. The school funding formula is old, antiquated, and outdated. It particularly is unfavorable to rural school districts. What you're seeing happen, particularly after Act 10, is you're seeing these smaller rural school districts are having a real challenging time recruiting and retaining teaching talent. You're seeing wealthier school districts that have more money are able to come in and essentially cherry pick experienced teachers that have a certain skill set that they want, typically, you know, in the more high demand, like tech ed, math, science. And you're finding that rural school districts are increasingly becoming challenged in attracting the kind of teachers they want to need. And in our communities, the school is the heart of the community. If you lose the school, you lose the community in the long run, because if you don't have a good local school, you're not going to continue to get young families to stay there, to move there. All you have to do is look at what's happened when there have been consolidations across the state and they move, they consolidate the schools into a district. The communities that typically lose the schools typically suffer in the long run. That was one of my primary motivations in running. I still have those same concerns. The challenge we have is that the formula favors wealthy suburban school districts, which are dominated by Republican legislators in Wisconsin who control the assembly agenda. And they do not seem to have any real sense or concern that the kind of damage it's doing to us in rural Wisconsin. Their school districts, relatively speaking, are doing well. Anytime you have sort of when you want to make changes, a winner or a loser, they would be relative losers in the sense that they would have to make some changes. They would probably have to give up more state aid in order for rural school districts to get more. They're going to fight it. And unfortunately, they're the ones in power right now.
Trey Kranchinski, I talked with State Senator Terry Moulton, who's outside of the 92nd district, but he said exactly what Christina just mentioned, is that anytime you change this, you're going to create winners and losers, and it's always going to be tough politically. So we've heard people for 20 years now say that the school funding formula is broken. A lot of candidates on this program have said that it needs to be changed, but yet we haven't changed it because of possibly the political stakes. So do you think first of all, what do you think about the referendums issue? More districts are going to referendum. Do you think that's the best way to increase aid to local districts as opposed to the state doling out more money to the locals?
Well, I think in the short term, that's a solution to the problem. I mean, the people that are paying the taxes, the people that it's affecting their children, they have the choice. And if they think that it's needed, they can make that decision. But, you know, looking in the long term, I would have to agree with Chris on rural funding for school districts. Yeah, they sometimes suffer. We got longer commutes. They all have to have, you know, full kitchens, and they have to have all the needs of big schools, but they don't have necessarily the funding coming in for those schools. And I get that. And it definitely needs to be looked at with rural schools. But I think the key problem is the growth in, say, the district like the 92nd. There are areas that are just stagnant in population growth and getting tax base there so the schools can get more money. And we need to get businesses into these small towns. We need to be open-minded, and we need to get people put to work, because these kids that are coming out, they need jobs, and there could be a lot of good jobs in small communities. And like Chris talks about, the school is the heart and soul of these communities. Well, businesses are heart and soul of communities as well. You got to have places for the parents to work so the kids can go to school. And that is important. But getting back to the referendum, for short term, if the people that pay the taxes agree to it, you got to think that that's a solution to their problem right in the short term. And it's not unheard of for referendums to pass.
We're joined by the men running to represent the 92nd State Assembly District. That district includes Trempealeau, parts of Trempealeau, Jackson, and Buffalo counties. A long list of cities, towns, and villages are included as well. Chris Dano is the Democrat in the race. He's the incumbent from Trempealeau. Trey Pronchinsky is the Republican challenger. They'll face off November 8th. We go to Jenny in Eau Claire. Jenny, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Well, so one area of political conversation that has broken wide open in recent weeks, thanks to Donald Trump's casual statements about how it's somehow okay for him to sexually assault women, is the conversation about the status of women, about sexism in general, and sexual harassment in the workplace particularly. And I would like both candidates to comment on how they would stand up for the full and equal rights of women to safety, employment, and respect. And I would further like for Mr. Pronchinsky to comment specifically on the lawsuit being brought against him as mayor and against the city of Mondovi for sexual discrimination in the workplace. And I'll hang up and take the response off the air.
All right, Jenny, thanks for that. Let's start with, Trey Pronchinsky, since she wanted to get some a response from you. What about Donald Trump's comments? How is that affecting not only the race, but do you think discourse in the U.S.? And also, if you can respond to the lawsuit that has been filed against, I believe that had to do with a police chief, correct?
Yes, officer of the city of Mondovi. But, you know, back to Mr. Trump, start with the first part of the question.
Yeah.
You know, this is something that our country has not ever seen, a politician with the style of Donald Trump. And it's disheartening to see some of the comments that are made by him and as well as the other side. I don't think they're getting directly to the issues. But I want to make it clear, everybody should be respected, and women especially. You know, there has been issues that have gone on over the course of time where women aren't treated fairly. I understand that. And they should be. They have just the right to be treated fairly just as well as men. And that's how I feel about that. And I have strong beliefs that women are able to do the same things that men are. So as for the lawsuit against the city of Mondovi, I'm not going to comment too much about that. It's still in litigation. There's an appeal. But the workforce development had a ruling, and it showed that there was absolutely no discrimination on my behalf or the city of Mondovi, and that is being appealed. And that is under litigation right now. That's an appeal process, and it's long. And that's where we're at with that, and I'm not going to comment any more about that. You know, I know there's a lot of people aware of this lawsuit, and it goes on for a long time sometimes with these lawsuits.
They definitely can. Chris Dano, your thoughts on, I guess, if you care to comment on both, the Donald Trump's comments regarding women seems to be hurting him in the polls, but for a core group of folks, it doesn't seem to matter a whole lot. They still are supporting him. I'm going to get to questions regarding that with both candidates for president a little later, but thoughts on Trump's comments and also thoughts, if you've got any, on the situation in Mondovi with regard to the lawsuit.
Yeah, well, first off, on the comments that Mr. Trump made, I mean, what he described, and we need to be absolutely clear here, what he described in the comment on the bus in particular is a sexual assault. When you have unwanted sexual when you engage in sexual contact without women, without their consent, that is sexual assault. And under Wisconsin law, it would be considered a fourth-degree sexual assault. If a man walked up to, say, a woman in a bar and did that, he would be, could very well be, and arrested and charged with sexual assault. When I was a police officer, we arrested and charged people with just those very things for doing something like that in a place without the woman's consent. So that's sexual assault, period. And I don't know of anybody. I have never bragged about, or I don't know if any of my friends or acquaintances or relatives have ever bragged about sexually assaulting women. That is anything but locker room talk. And obviously, I think a big part of the problem we have with sexual harassment in the workplace is it's often tolerated by other men, or they're afraid to say something. And you need, you know, when we're in those workplaces and we see something like that, that behavior that is going on, it is clearly inappropriate, men need to say something as well. They need to step forward and say, no, that's inappropriate, that's absolutely wrong, what you're doing is incorrect, wrong, potentially illegal, and you need to be you need to confront the people that are engaged in that behavior. As far as the circumstances in Mondovi, you know, of course, when Mr. Pronchinsky announced against me, and I you know, first thing you do is when you have an opponent is you Google the name, and mm-hmm. of course that article popped up and I read it. I'll be honest, I was like, whoa, this is, you know, some tough stuff here. Obviously, there's a legal process that we've got to work through. You know, I would suggest that if people have concerns about it, they probably look it up in the media, read what the comments are on both sides, and draw their own conclusions. I'm certainly not going to be willing to draw conclusions, but I would certainly encourage people to at least look at what's being said there and see if they, you know, may sort of pass the smell test. And I guess that would be the only thing I would have to say on that at this point.
Since we already talked about one of the candidates, Craig Pronchinsky, I'll ask you very simply, you know, some Republicans are kind of jumping ship with regard to their support of Donald Trump. Others are condemning what he has said, but yet they're, like Paul Ryan, for example, still not going as far as unendorsing. Where do you stand on Donald Trump? Do you endorse him for president?
Well, I see the party not uniting, and I think if the Republicans think they have a chance to win on November 8th at the presidential level, I think that that's going to be the problem if Donald does not win. They have to be united. You know, Donald has said a few things that really kind of shake me up a little bit. And in all fairness, Ms. Clinton has said some things that have shaken me up. But, you know, it kind of stinks that we have to pick the lesser of two evils. That's how I feel about that. But when it comes down to November, I have to make that decision. I'm sorry, it's almost November. When it comes down to Election Day on November 8th, I have to make a decision. And I guess I'm just going to keep that to myself right now. I mm-hmm. might be one of those undecideds that are out there, but I agree with a lot of things Donald Trump says, but I also disagree with a lot of it. And, you know, it's going to be some tough decisions for people that are in that booth. And I think there's a lot more undecided than people are saying.
And Chris Dano, with regard to Hillary Clinton, PolitiFact has confirmed that after leaving the State Department, one of her staff members deleted 33,000 emails from her private email server that she used as Secretary of State. Also, since then, we've been inundated with a stream of emails supposedly from Clinton's campaign manager that show possible connections between the Clinton Foundation donations and State Department favors, et cetera. I mean, it keeps coming over and over again. Do you trust Hillary Clinton?
Well, look, I mean, here's what it boils down to. There's no real there, as they say. This is somebody, you know, and I think one thing we ought to keep in perspective, I'm old enough to remember that this is a person who's been under attack since she was first lady. And I think a lot of the negative perceptions that are out there are a perfect example of what happens when you keep up a constant stream of negative invective against somebody over a long period of time. She's never been charged with a criminal offense. She's never been convicted of a criminal offense. As a politician, she's somewhat a calculating person. Show me a successful politician or businessman who isn't somewhat calculating. You have to be if you're going to be successful. Is she the most gifted public speaker? She doesn't come across as warm and fuzzy like her husband did or the president does. But is she perfectly perfectly qualified to be president? Absolutely. And particularly when we have a choice right now, and this is what it boils down to for folks. One of these two people will be the next president of the United States. It's either going to be Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. It's not going to be Jill Stein or Gary Johnson. It's going to be Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. That's your choice. And for me, it's an easy choice. We have a candidate who, with Mr. Trump, is fundamentally a bigot, a xenophobe, a misogynist, who's bragged about sexually assaulting women, whose debate performances demonstrate that he has no grasp of the issues. He clearly is probably one of the least qualified candidates we've ever had for president, even for public office in this country in a long time. And so in that sense, it's very easy. It's going to be Hillary Clinton.
I'm speaking this hour with Treg Pronchinsky. He is the Republican candidate for the 92nd State Assembly District, and Chris Dano is the Democratic candidate for the 92nd State Assembly District. If you're in that area, I'm not sure if you are going to be voting for one of these two gentlemen. Trempealeau, Jackson, Buffalo counties, parts of some cities, including Black River Falls, Mondovi, Whitehall, Independence, Buffalo City, etc. That's the general area. Right now, we'll go to Eau Claire, and I believe it's well, you're on the air. I'm not sure quite who the name of the caller is. You're on the air.
Good morning. My name is Joan.
Joan, thank you very much, Joan. It was a typo on the call-in screen, but what's your question?
I am interested in your guest's views on the effects of the $1.6 billion in cuts to K-12 education in 2011 and the $250 million in cuts to University of Wisconsin in 2015 under this Republican administration. Also, views on the degradation of our Wisconsin environmental regulations under this Republican administration, resulting in the degradation of our Wisconsin environment. And thank you for allowing me to speak.
Thank you, Joan. I appreciate the call. There's a bit to unpack there. I'll start with you, Chris Dano. With regard to, we already touched on some of the school funding issues, but that's a big number that folks like to quote. And that,
that's a real number.
The folks on the other side would say that that was offset by some of the savings from Act 10. But either way, your thoughts in general on that, and we'll get into some of the DNR changes in
a
bit.
Look, we know if, you know, again, I got into this business because I care about the future of the state. And we know the best thing you can do if people are concerned about long-term economic development is to have an educated population. You know, continuous development of a skilled workforce. You need obviously a good primary education. And then you're going to need secondary schools, the technical colleges, the university system. We know if you look around the world at developing countries, when you want to do long-term economic development, the best thing you can do for your long-term economic growth is to invest in your educational institutions and systems. And right now, under the Republican administration, the past 5 years, we've seen a disinvestment in those public institutions of both the primary and higher education, which is absolutely counter to what we need to do for the long-term economic growth of this state. And that's what is so frustrating about this, because everything we're doing is potentially has potential very significant long-term negative impacts. It's no accident that Silicon Valley grew up in the area it did. Caltech, Berkeley, Stanford, places like that. The Research Triangle of North Carolina, Duke, University of North Carolina. Why is Boston, Massachusetts such a hub for economic development that that General Electric literally moved its headquarters there? It's because of all those institutions of higher learning. Those are the kind of things that, again, create long-term economic growth and development. And by disinvesting in them, we really shortchange the citizens of our state, both in the short term and the long term.
Treg Pronchinsky, your thoughts on the caller's concerns about more than $1 billion being cut from public education in the state since, I guess, Governor Walker took office.
Yeah, well, it's important that we have our K through 12 kids educated and educated well. We can't fall behind. We need to get them ready for the workforce. We need to get them ready for technical college or university for that matter. And, you know, tough decisions have to be made. You know, I support funding the schools. They need to be good stewards of the money that they're given. They need to be using it wisely. School boards that are out there need to look over how this money is spent and where they should spend these things. And, you know, sometimes cuts have to happen. And I think in the future we need to look at, and we talked about funding rural schools, and I think that they get the short end of the stick once in a while. Well, maybe not just once in a while, maybe all the time. But if I am a representative for the 92nd, I'm going to look into this funding for rural schools because it is important. We need to have these kids that grow up ready for the workforce. And I don't think there's anybody out there that's raising a child that doesn't want their kid to be successful. And if we're going to have public schools, we need to give it the best environment that we possibly can. But we need to make cuts at times. And going forward from here, we definitely have to look at fixing the problem, but we need economic growth in these small cities so we can get some tax base in these rural areas, and that is very important.
Do you think the economic growth follows investments in education, or do you think it should be the other way around? Like you mentioned before that to help deal with the funding issues for rural schools would be to build up the economies, to get more businesses in those rural districts. Chicken or the egg? Which do you think comes first?
Well, I think this. I think that there's a lot of people that could be put to work in areas. And I'll use an example. You know, I live in Mondovi. It's only about 25 miles from Eau Claire. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people that live even south of Mondovi that drive to Eau Claire. And the same with La Crosse that drive south to La Crosse. They commute a long time. And they've got jobs in those areas. And I think that there would be a lot of people that would like to work in these rural communities. And they're there to work. They want to go to work. They want to work in their communities, but they're forced to go outside their communities. And they have a lot of extra expense, whether it's fuel or car maintenance, anything like that. So I think that is one of the problems we have with getting some funding towards these rural schools.
You're listening to a candidate debate for Wisconsin's 92nd State Assembly District. The debate was recorded earlier this week in our Wisconsin Public Radio studios in Eau Claire. The moderator is WPR's Rich Kramer. The candidates are incumbent Democratic State Representative Chris Dano of Trumplow, who's seeking a fifth two-year term in the legislature. His challengers, Republican Craig Pronshinsky, a businessman and the mayor of the city of Mondovi. Voters will choose between the two in the November 8th general election. The candidate with the most votes will represent all or parts of Buffalo, Trumplow, and Jackson counties in the State Assembly for the next 2 years. Coming up, we'll hear more from a debate between the candidates for the 92nd Assembly District. The candidates will talk about solutions to Wisconsin transportation funding challenges and the way the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is responding to environmental issues. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. You'll also find links to other debates between candidates in our region. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. This is Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. We're in the middle of an election debate with candidates in Western Wisconsin's 92nd State Assembly District. The district includes all or parts of Trumplow, Jackson, and Buffalo counties, including the communities of Trumplow, Galesville, Arcadia, and Black River Falls. Incumbent Democrat Chris Dano of Trumplow and his GOP challenger, Craig Pronshinsky of Mondovi, conclude this forum with a discussion on transportation funding and the way environmental issues are being resolved in Wisconsin. Dano has served the past 4 terms in the State Assembly and is a former police officer in Onalaska. Pronshinsky is a business owner and has been the mayor of the city of Mondovi since 2014. Wisconsin Public Radio's Rich Kramer moderated the debate, which was recorded earlier this week at Wisconsin Public Radio Studios in Eau Claire.
We got to talk about transportation before the end of the hour. Road funding, basically. It's going to be one of the larger funding questions in this next budget. We're expected to come up short again. The governor has said that he's not going to raise taxes or fees. He has announced some more money to local towns and counties, et cetera, local governments to help with road repairs. But there's still some bonding involved. I think it's something like $500 million. I'm not positive on that. But a lot of folks on both sides of the aisle this year have been saying that we need to increase revenue in the form of either a gas tax, toll roads, registration fees, and I want to get take your pulses on this. Craig Pronshinsky, I'll start with you. Do you think that more money is needed for transportation, and do you think that it has to come from taxes or fees?
Well, that's something that's been debated
again for a long time.
Throughout the campaign, that's that's kind of a hot topic. And I think that it's kind of got heated up because we've had some flooding in the area and roads kind of got wrecked.
Yeah.
I mean, they really took a toll, you know, culverts, bridges, you name it. And, of course, now how are we going to pay for this? Well, it was tough to begin with, and now we have these other issues. But, you know, getting to the fees or the taxes, and I've been open about this. I'm all about lowering taxes, no more taxes. But, you know, the gas tax hasn't been raised in 10 years, and that's a long time. And gas prices are actually down quite a bit compared to where they were. And if we were going to raise the gas tax, I think now is the time that we would do that if we would, you know, go that route. And I would entertain the debate on gas tax. We have to figure out a way to get these roads improved across the state and through these small townships. And I've talked to the town chairman of many townships in the district and supervisors, and they have a tough time. And I know what they're talking about being the mayor of Mondovi. We deal with this year after year on what projects we're going to take on. We have a lot of infrastructure under these roads that need to be taken care of. And, you know, there's many solutions to the problem, but what's the best for all? You know, we talk about the governor doesn't want to raise fees. Well, we need to be comparable to other states. I understand that. And, you know, the fees and the gas tax are probably one of the fairest tax we have, with the exception of people that have electric cars. And, you know, they don't pay the gas tax. And we could look at different angles of getting revenue there, but once again, there isn't as many electric cars out there as gas, so you're not going to really get a huge bite. But I've also heard discussion about having municipal sales tax that go directly towards road funding, and I would entertain giving the authority to these municipalities to do that. It would directly affect the people that live there, and they could get some revenue, but it would have to go directly to road funding. This isn't to get revenue for something else. And of course, counties have done wheel taxes and things like that. There's many options out there. But my point is this. I don't want to be borrowing money to pay for roads today to make our kids pay for it. And we have to find a solution to this problem. And it's a hot topic out there.
Yeah, definitely. Chris Dano, your thoughts on the calls for increased taxes or fees, whether it be the gas tax, registration fees, et cetera?
You laid out the options, Rich, earlier, and I think we have to have a serious discussion. What really concerns me is more and more of the transportation budget is being consumed by interest payments on the loans that are being taken out, because the governor and the Republican legislature does not want to deal with the issue. They keep essentially kicking the can down the road, for lack of a better term. Fundamentally, what you're talking about, though, is, again, infrastructure improvements and maintenance and upgrades is one of the best is another good thing you can do for long-term economic development. I mean, part of the reason we have town roads is so farmers can get their goods to market. If you have a small community, you need to have the kind of infrastructure that, say, if you want a small manufacturing plant in there, that they can get their trucks in and out, that they get materials in, they can get the final product out to market on a good road system. It's critical. And or railheads or rail junctions or rail spurs, those types of things. That is, again, one of those things that's going to lead to long-term economic growth. We've seen what happened when the interstate highway system was created. Areas along with the interstate highway system that they had major exits saw economic growth. Now you can argue about some of the other effects. But when you do those kinds of things, you do it. The other thing is, guess what? When you're repairing roads, when you're repairing bridges, rebuilding bridges, you're putting people to work. Those are real jobs that pay a good wage. Operating engineers are out there, bridge builders, road builders. Those are all good jobs, and they're typically local jobs. Those are local contractors doing a lot of the work, and they're putting people to work. And the great thing about it is it's doing good things for the community in the long term, because if that bridge that's going to gets built is in good place and holds up for the next 40, 50 years, that community is in good shape. We've seen that over time. You invest in your if you invest in your community, it will pay dividends. The challenge is obviously making sure that the resources are there. Now, I supported some of these initiatives to allow local communities to be able to do this, but what it was fundamentally about, it was basically a way for the Republican legislature to chicken out of actually having to take a hard vote on it. instead of the Republican legislature saying, we're going to bring this stuff up for a vote for transportation funding, now what we're going to do is we're going to put it down on the local – we're going to put it on the county officials and the local officials. And guess what? You guys can take the hard vote to raise taxes locally. You guys can take the heat, not the legislature. And that's one of the things that frustrates me about a lot of this. And that's what's happened with school district funding too, right? Instead of the legislature stepping up and the Republican legislature stepping up and fixing the school formula and saying, we're going to take the heat and do the right thing, we're just going to push it on to the local communities and make those local folks, the school board, have to ask for a referendum and make them take the heat for the things we're that the Republican legislature is failing to do in Madison.
Joan mentioned, along with, or one of the callers earlier also mentioned the DNR, and the Environmental Protection Agency has reviewed and is considering, I believe, State Department of Natural Resources records after a environmental group called Midwest Environmental Advocates. They brought a suit, or they basically asked the EPA to take a look at the DNR's records because they're worried that the DNR isn't doing enough to protect the state's water and resources. After years of staffing shortages at the DNR, an audit showed earlier this year that the agency hasn't been able to follow its own rules on regulations regarding what are known as CAFOs, concentrated animal feeding operations. Do you think it's right that the feds are checking Wisconsin's work, and do you think that the DNR is fulfilling its obligations to the people of Wisconsin? Treg Pranchinski, I'll start with you.
Well, I actually want to make a comment about what Chris said.
Sure.
If you don't mind, then I'll get to your question there about pressing the decisions onto these school boards and local governments about road funding and making tough decisions. These people know their communities better than anybody, and they're there to make tough decisions. They're not just there to go with the flow and not make any waves. If they know there's a problem that is occurring, they need to be proactive to take care of these problems before they actually become huge problems that are not reversible. So I think that they're there for important decisions. He commented about how some of the legislators down in Madison kind of chickened out on it. Well, you know, they're there to make tough decisions as well, but you can't forget about the local officials. They're just as important. So back to the question about the DNR, you know, there's been a perception that the DNR has been very difficult with people. And, you know, things have been shaken up a little bit, so to speak, since Governor Walker's gotten in office with the DNR. And the bottom line is this: we need to take care of our property. We need to be good stewards of our property and our waters. We can't allow pollution to happen in those things. And, you know, the federal government stepping in and thinking that we're not doing a good enough job, well, let's have them see for themselves if we are indeed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these are touchy things in different districts where you have a lot of cabins or lakeshore property. You know, I've worked on some of these homes, and one for an example, it took forever for a guy to get a permit to improve his property, which is going to give more tax base. And he went through all the hoops, and then after he went through all the hoops, they lightened it up for him a little bit, and he was pretty frustrated about that. But, you know, he wants his property to be beautiful. He doesn't want to wreck the waters. He's been there for a long time, and we have second, third generation people who own cabins or even live on these places. They're beautiful properties. But, you know, we have to be reasonable with allowing people to do things on their property. And I understand the water is everybody's water. But if the feds want to come in and take a look and see what we're doing, and if they find it acceptable, well, I guess maybe it is working.
And, Chris Dano, your thoughts on well, the argument is property rights versus folks that are concerned about things like the shoreland zoning and all that. The argument is that you've got winners and losers, and if you make rules that are too strict, in some opinions, for the water, that means that you can't do anything with your property. Well, so, your response?
Yeah. Here's the issue we're facing with what's going on at DNR. since the governor's taken office and the Republicans took control of the legislature, the agency has been badly politicized. Career staff have left in droves. The agency is short-staffed in many critical areas. Part of the reason people can't get permits in a timely manner is because the staff simply isn't there to process them. Obviously, first come, first serve, and as permits get processed, other ones start to pile up. That's been a big problem. I can tell you I've spoken with agency employees all over, both in my district, plus folks who come and chat with me because I have a background in natural resources. A lot of them know that I understand these issues. I have a master's of science in natural resources from Stevens Point. So they come and chat with me. They say, Chris, the morale in the agency has never, ever been lower. The big problem is this administration, this legislature, has really taken the ability of the department to take science into account when they make decisions. And know that when you're talking about natural resources issues, the science should ultimately drive at least the beginning of the process for the facts. You know, the policy gets made by the policymakers and the legislature and the rules makers. But you need to have good science so you can actually ask the good questions to say, what should the policy be? And they're telling me right now, the science isn't being done anymore. You know, as an example, Representative Miller and I sent a pretty strong letter to the governor's office in addressing how they deal with the chronic wasting disease issue. And what's happened? The governor's office has now delayed, or the DNR has now delayed their supposedly updated plan that they were going to do to deal with CWD till after the election, which I noticed, which was, I thought, interesting timing. So, you know, with my background, I'm terribly aware of what's going on with the DNR. And the thing I will point out to people, and I think Mr. Prunchinsky doesn't really realize this. If EPA steps in and says the DNR is not doing its job in properly managing water pollution controls and permits, EPA will then step in and do it. And if you don't like dealing with the DNR in Madison, you're not going to like having to deal with the EPA either in Minnesota in the Twin Cities or down in Chicago, because that's who will then start taking over permitting and pollution controls and that sort of thing. And you want to take That's where these things can come back to bite us. If the DNR doesn't start doing its job, the feds will step in and take over, because what is going on is DNR essentially operates and manages the federal programs and federal laws that have been put in place under the Clean Water Act. If EPA has to step in and do it, it's going to be a lot more challenging for every resident of the state of Wisconsin and for every business in this state. And I don't think any of us want to see that happen. But if DNR isn't doing its job, that's what may happen.
With regard to the vacancies at DNR, some of the findings in the audit, the deficiencies, do you think it's happening on purpose? Do you think this was part of a plan to weaken the agency?
Very definitely. I think that's been very, very clear. I mean, you can look at the comments the secretary of the DNR has made about her belief that we need to have sort of this mentality that anything sort of a chamber of commerce, that anything they want goes. You know, the job of any regulatory agency and government, quite frankly, is to balance competing interests. We have public interests. We have private interests. Our job as a legislature and our job of agencies is to balance those interests. You know, people should be able to enjoy their property to the best possible, but it doesn't give them the right to pollute our public waterways. You know, Wisconsin has a very strong constitutional doctrine dealing with public trust. You know, most of our the waterways are a public trust. Our wildlife is a public trust. And we have a responsibility to our constituents in the state to manage that public trust.
Very quickly, while we at the state level can't do a whole lot about immigration reform, there has been a bill introduced that would make it possible for undocumented workers in Wisconsin to get driver's licenses. And this would the argument for it is that it would make the road safer because they'd have to have driver training. They'd also have to have insurance. On the other side, folks are saying that it would reward illegal immigrants. And very quickly, yes or no, if you can, do you support this idea, Craig Prunchinsky, of making it possible for illegal immigrants to get driver's license in Wisconsin?
Well, I think the big question is if there's illegal immigrants here, should they be here? That's the question before you get to that. And, you know, it's a problem across the country. And, you know, we have to be smart about how we go about things here. If we let them get a driver's license, well, then are they going to become legal citizens then? And, you know, I mean, in a nutshell, I know we're short on time. why are they here to begin with? That's the question.
Sure. Chris Dano, your thoughts.
Well, look, would you rather have a bunch of people out there without driver's licenses operating on the roadways, or would you rather have some system of at least some level of regulation and control in place? And that's the real question. Ultimately, it's about public safety. And if it's going to improve public safety, it probably should be looked at.
Incumbent Democrat Chris Dano of Tremplo and his challenger, Mondovi Republican Treg Pronshinsky, are candidates in the November 8th general election for Wisconsin's 92nd State Assembly District. Dano is a former Onalaska police officer and has served in the Assembly since first winning election in the fall of 2008. Pronshinsky owns a construction business and has served as mayor in the city of Mondovi since 2014. The two participated in a broadcast debate recorded earlier this week in Wisconsin Public Radio's Eau Claire studios, moderated by WPR's Rich Kramer. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. You'll also find links to the candidates' websites and more information on elections in our region. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers.